Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I come to you live alternate Wednesdays at 9 p.m. I've got a really interesting episode tonight, Wednesday, April 6th, called Tune-Up and Oil Change, Keeping Marriages Healthy. Joining me as my special guest is Sergio Parada, a psychologist specializing in couples work in Byfield, Mass. Sergio also works with an organizational consulting firm named Kai Associates in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You can reach him at kiprinciple@msn.com. That's kiprinciple@msn.com. Sergio has been my mentor and therapy consultant since I was about 5 years old, and I credit him with teaching me volumes and keeping me on target in this work. Hi, Sergio.
Hi, Susan.
How you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah?
I thought we were going to talk about cars.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Frickin' frack, you know?
Yeah, well, should I get my other notes? Meekum Auto. That probably keeps a lot of couples together, looking at, getting into, buying, and exploring new cars, I'm sure.
Well, either that or it splits them apart.
That's right. I've seen it work both ways. Now, you've got some crackling on your end.
It's been going on here.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you're okay now.
All right.
Anyway, just a few technical issues for our listeners. Your toll-free call-in number is 877-497-9046. All callers will be muted unless you have a question or a comment. If so, you can raise your hand by dialing 1, and you'll be in line to be on the air. So that's that. Anyway, so Sergio, I'm wondering if you could tell our listeners how you came to the conclusions that you have about healthy marriages.
Well, you know, a lot of it comes through clinical work. We're supposed to say that a lot of it comes through research, and some of it does. But how often do you read those journals, Susan?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Not as often as we should.
Not as often as we should. So really, a lot of the information that I gather is really gathered throughout the years doing couples work, doing couples therapy when things go wrong, and then try to put things back on track. But
mm-hmm.
another source of just really seeing how healthy couples work is just observing. You know, friends that have good marriages. My parents had a great marriage. You know, just
wow.
Looking around and seeing, you know, what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. So just kind of observation, mostly.
Life experience and observation, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I don't know about you, but looking at your own marriage, really reflecting on my own marriage and thinking, what screwed that up? What are we doing lately that's either not so swift or that's really good?
Well, that's true, too. I mean, I happen to have lucked into a very good marriage. So, that's a source of strength for me and information about how to keep it fresh and keep it positive.
Yeah. Well, looking at what's kind of playing out in a positive way. But you're saying lucked into. Now, that doesn't sound like a therapist talking, that it was luck.
Well, you know,
is
luck has
luck?
A lot to do with things in life. We don't like to think that, but yes, luck has something to do with it. You know, you're lucky enough to meet a mate that you actually get along with and see eye to eye with and grow old with, and that's
mm-hmm.
some of that of course is experience and avoiding bad experiences, but some of it is just luck.
Yeah,
into that right person at the right time.
Yeah, I think finding somebody who's an easier mix with you rather than somebody where the pot gets stirred every single day and it just feels like so much work.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Sergio, why do you think when we talk about healthy marriages or not healthy marriages, why do you think couples lose their healthy edge that they had early in the marriage? Things, so often I hear stories when I meet with couples about how the beginning, just tonight again, the beginning is so easy and it just kind of flows. And why do you think that ebbs away?
Well, you know, there may be many reasons, but one of the things that does seem to happen is that couples go through stages, you know, phases in life. You know, people come together and they make the decision to get married, and that starts a whole process you're meeting challenges, life challenges together. The family therapists call it, the developmental stages of a family, where they talk about the courtship stage, the early marriage phase,
mm-hmm.
the kids coming into the marriage phase, the kids entering school where you're negotiating other systems and other adult figures in the kids' lives, the adolescence phase where all sorts of new energy gets infused into the family, and the adolescent does everything he or she can to split the couple up and, you know, divide and conquer. And then, you know, there's the launching an empty nest phase that a lot of times you see people say, "Oh, you know, who are you? I don't think
right.
I remember you. Who were? Oh yeah, maybe a long time ago." And then, you know, the retirement and growing old together and being grandparents together, that kind of stage. And each stage brings its own challenges. And if you don't successfully negotiate the challenges of one stage, those can be left over to the next stage and cripple you as you try to deal with the stresses of the next phase of life.
Yeah. So it's a kind of gradual mastery, it sounds like.
Yeah, gradual mastery. And when you don't master a phase, it can come back to haunt you, and you have to go back and redo it or improve upon what you did.
Yeah. I see so many couples who they're within, it seems like it's the first 6 to 7 years. I think maybe there's something to be said for that old saying, the seven-year itch.
Yeah.
But within the first 6 or 7 years, and they're having so much difficulty that there are really questions about staying in the marriage. Suddenly there's all this conflict and division. And I'm wondering, what would you want our listeners to understand about why you think couples have so much difficulty within the first few years?
Well, in some ways that's the most difficult transition. You know, you're transitioning from thinking about one's self, you know, the me, to thinking about us, you know, how we're going to do things together. And you know, we're a me generation, a me society. So that transition oftentimes is pretty tough for people. And there's lots of small challenges in that transition. You know, you have to come together on beliefs and come to understand that your own belief about the world, your own perspectives about the world aren't the only ones. You know, that your partner has a viable way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
And a viable way of doing things, you know, that, you know, it isn't the way your mother did it, but it's the way he or she is doing it.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult transition for many people, and you're forced to look at the assumptions of why you believe what you believe, and sometimes that you should have looked at those assumptions way beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you a little story that actually happened to me with a woman that I almost married. Okay, we did not get married, which was probably a good thing.
That was lucky too, right?
Yes, that was luck too.
Sergio, before you go on,
yeah.
Your phone sounds like it has asthma. Is there something you can do to adjust it? It's like squeezing. Are you on an intercom?
No, I'm on a landline.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, no, there must be something in the wire, because
yeah,
as soon as
okay.
I move, it crackles.
Yeah, okay. So you cannot move for the next hour. You have to be completely frozen.
I am trying to be frozen. But Susan,
anyway.
I'm Italian.
That's right. You have to move around. Just
Italians move when they talk.
Okay.
So I was about to tell you this this interesting story when I was actually I was engaged to be married to this woman, and we decided we would try living together. And these are the small things, you know, they seem insignificant, but they're a sign of, you know, rigidity. Now I'm going to throw her under the bus because, you know, she doesn't know, she's probably not listening.
And no names named.
And no names, and I'm sure that I did all sorts of terrible things too. But I remember we used to have this incredible fight about when we did the laundry, how the towels should be folded. If I folded them in half, she would have a fit. She said, "That's not how you fold towels. You fold them in thirds, and you then, you know, you make them nice and narrow like this."
Sounds like me.
Yeah, I mean, that's like crazy. Like, okay, that's a good way of doing it, but why do you have to do it that way? And so she couldn't explain why you had to do it that way. Then one day we went to visit her grandmother, and I thought, you know, let me ask her, you know, why is it that in your family, you know, she learned to fold towels this way? She said, "Oh, well, that's easy. When, you know, when we were young, we had this house where the towel closet had very narrow and deep shelves. So the only way you could stack the towels was if you folded them in thirds, and you could stack them into these very narrow and thin shelves." So I ran over to her and said, "This is why you've been forcing me to fold the towels?" Now, there's an assumption, you know, this has to be done this way.
Yeah.
For what reason?
Right.
Where, you know, you have to be able to give and take. You know, maybe there's more than one way of folding towels.
Yeah, yeah. I actually broke off an engagement 3 weeks before I was supposed to get married. And the thing that I wasn't really thinking about was that my fiance was tooling around taking pictures. He was a photographer and probably screwing around with people wherever he went. He was shooting all the demonstrations all over. But that hadn't occurred to me. What occurred to me was that I was having more feelings for the rabbi who was supposed to marry us than I did for the guy I was engaged to. So I think that was probably a very telling thing, that the real problem was that his notion, the larger problem I wasn't focusing on, was that his notion of we-ness involved much more separateness and lack of accountability than my notion of we-ness.
Exactly.
So that probably would have been a disaster had we gotten married.
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing you're forced to sort of try to work out in those early years.
Yeah.
And if you don't work them out, then the marriage actually can end right there.
Yeah. So I think, you know, one other thing I've noticed in my work is that I think our culture, I don't know, your family's from Italy, and I think you spent some of your growing up time in Rome, right?
I did, yes.
Okay. But so I don't know if it's just this culture, but I think this culture in particular prepares us really badly for the realities that in the beginning you're going to feel like you're fused and you're one, two souls united. You're going to see everything the same. It's for pair bonding and it ensures preservation of the species. But inevitably, there will naturally be more of an experience of difference unless you're in a symbiotic kind of bond.
Absolutely.
That there'll be more experience of we are not the same, and the couples just aren't prepared for that.
They're not. But in a sense, you know, that's really why we get together. We don't get together with a clone of ourselves. We get together with someone who's different and interesting, you know. So. And in the beginning, that's exciting and fun and interesting. But then, you know, you've got the differences you have to mediate. And if you don't mediate those differences, then they begin to stick in your craw. You know, then you're irritated by the very thing that you used to think was actually quite endearing in the other person.
Yeah.
And again, that's the stage where that kind of stuff gets worked out or doesn't, in which case it gets postponed into a later stage and causes troubles later on.
Yeah. Now, do you think that there are any particular rules or means or ways that couples can stay healthy through the different stages of development? Any particular tools that come to mind?
Well, I mean, I think the important thing is good communication. You know, I say three words: communication, communication, communication. But that's an essential part of A, negotiating differences, B, speaking about your attraction and your caring about the other person, and C, you know, working together as a team to resolve the problems that life throws in your direction. So being able to have good communication between the two of you is so essential.
Mm-hmm.
And that prevents a lot of problems.
Yeah, but then the problem becomes that people don't know how to communicate. I don't know about you, but so many of the couples I see come in with that as they are presenting complaint. Either they say, we don't communicate, which is a fallacy. No matter what you're doing, you're communicating.
Right.
Or they say, we don't communicate well. We can't communicate.
Right.
And I'm wondering, are there any particular strategies that you encourage couples to use to make sure that they're communicating well? They're not just talking at each other.
Well, couple speak is one.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into plug for Susan's business.
You did not pay me to say that.
No, that was unsolicited.
But no, I mean, I think that there are ways in which you can learn sort of the tools of better communication, which helps you not only in the couple, but also in talking to coworkers and other people in life. But, you know, a lot of it, you know, comes down to the issue of spending time together. What tends to happen in this modern world is that both people are working their tails off just to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's very little time where you're actually face-to-face with each other. And even that face-to-face time, if it's not husbanded well, if it's not managed well, you know, you spend complaining or, you know, beating each other up. So the very first place where good communication starts is making the time for each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's essential to have a time where you can just sit across or next to each other and have a half an hour of communication about the day, about how things are going for you, about the good dream you had the night before or the bad dream you had the night before. And that begins to clear the airwaves. So when there's difficult communication that has to happen, the lines of communication are strong and they can manage that communication. And that's an essential piece. You know, I would say that at least once a week you should go and do something together, not necessarily something that takes a lot of money. You can go take a walk together. You can go to lunch together or go for a cup of coffee together. But to spend some time together to just reconnect with the person that you had decided you wanted to be with.
And I think so many couples either don't make that time, they're just so stressed and overwrought and pulled in so many directions, or so kid-centered,
yeah.
Their lives have become so child-centric that they don't make the time. They can't imagine how to make the time. Or when they do get together, inevitably one person will lead in with a problem or a complaint, and that seems to blow the whole thing out of the water.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head. You know, if communication only happens when you get something to complain about, then who wants it? You're going to avoid time together.
Right.
So I think you have to make that time to celebrate each other and to do enjoyable things.
Yeah.
So that when the tough communication has to happen, you've got, it's happening on a bed of positive credits, positive
right.
emotional credits you've developed.
Right. I encourage couples also to remember that communication is a dialogue. It's a two-way street.
Yeah.
Often women hog the conversation, myself included. We have more words. I think, 7,000 for every 2,000 guys have? So it's a monopoly.
Not with Italians. Italian men can hold their own.
And if not with words, they do it with gesticulation, right?
Gesticulation.
But encouraging people to recognize that it's a turn-taking, and that for one person to hog the airways is not communication.
No, it's not, and the other person's really not going to want to listen. It's that they can fall asleep or just, you know, do the kind of routine, which is not good communication.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is about tone. It is about evenness. So, you know, this is what I think. What do you think? You know, let me hear what you have to say about this. So that it is a dialogue. So that there are two people involved. It's starting to begin.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Yeah, you're crinkly. You sound like you're eating Rice Krispies, are you?
I wish.
Tell our listeners. There's only 100,000 people out there listening. If you're having Rice Krispies, just come out, you know. Anyway, I tell people, I encourage people to be curious in conversation.
Yes.
And rather than just putting your opinions out there, which we're all so apt to do, ask questions and be curious. And that's like the grease. The grease is the wheel of the communication machine.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, be curious. You know, when your partner says something that they've experienced or that they're going through, try to enter into that world with them. You know, so tell me more about that. How did that happen? And what were you thinking? And how did that feel? And, you know, that kind of interest where you're leaning in to the story, into your partner's experience. I think that's so important.
Yeah, yeah. I meet with one couple where one problem is that they love each other very dearly, but one problem is a very extreme introvert and processes things in a very solitary kind of internal way.
Right.
And so part of the issue becomes for that person to think of sharing as something that is a good thing, not to have to work it out all in his own head.
Absolutely. You know, and oftentimes that person is a male, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Very often it's the male who sort of retreats and thinks and then you talk to them later and say, well, you know, what were you thinking? I was thinking that she was actually right and that, you know, that I should, well, why didn't you tell her? You know,
yeah.
That would have made a whole big difference in the conversation.
Be Italian.
So I usually say to men, you know, well, it's usually men that are the ones who are not speaking. I say, if it's in your mind, put it out there, you know, let your partner know what you're thinking. It's important for them to understand where you're coming from, what you're thinking.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's really important. Now, Sergio, and by the way, we do have several listeners on the line.
Oh, okay.
If anybody has a question, are you okay, Sergio, with people just asking a question midstream rather than waiting to the end?
Anytime you feel it's best, sure.
Yeah, okay. Because I found that on some other shows, if we waited to the end, either our listener had fallen asleep, that's usually my husband, or they kind of forgot what the question was by the time we got to the end. And so we might want to be a little bit more fluid and adventurous. So if you have a question, listener, just press 1, dial 1. I will then see a little hand next to your number, and I'll put you on the air, and you can ask your question or make your comment. So we can think of this as a conversation, a larger conversation.
Exactly.
Sergio, before we go forward with any other things, I'm wondering, what are your thoughts about when you think of a healthy marriage? What, in your mind, are the qualities that ensure a healthy marriage, or that help a marriage either get healthy or stay healthy?
Well, you know, I told you earlier, I don't read a lot of the journals and a lot of research, but years ago I had when I was teaching in a doctoral program, I had a student who did a dissertation on successful couples. You know, she interviewed couples who had been married 30 years or more and who defined themselves as successfully married, happily married. And it was a very basic research design. So she asked, you know, what are the qualities of your marriage that make it so successful? And what she found across the board was agreement. The top three things there was significant agreement on. And the responses were that the most important thing was a sense of mutual respect, that what makes for a successful marriage is a sense that your partner really respects you and who you are, likes you for who you are, and vice versa. That was, across the board, something that these successful marriages, married couples, talked about. The second, believe it or not, which is not something you would think of, is a sense of humor. The ability,
oh, yeah.
The ability to laugh together, to have light, fun times, you know, just where you could smile at each other and laugh together. You know, I don't know if this is true, but they say that the Eskimo phrase for making love is laughing together.
Oh, you know? Wow.
So, you know, that they go off in the igloo to laugh together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that's really true or if it's one of those.
Well, they probably have to stay warm.
They probably have to stay warm. but I think it's something important to remember that's, you know, life is difficult, but at least in your marriage, you should be able to just enjoy some light times.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing that there was significant agreement on was that your partner is also your best friend. And, you know, you hear that phrase, it seems like a trite phrase, but it really isn't. You know, if you think of, you know, who do you want on your team? Who do you want on your side? Who do you want to come home to and tell your troubles to and watch your back? It's you know, that's your partner.
Trust.
That made yeah, exactly. That made for successful marriages.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that says it.
The what?
I think that says it all.
Yeah. I think, you know, the laughing together really speaks to a few other strengths that I think are really important. A sense of fun in the marriage, because when you're laughing, you're having fun.
Right.
But it's also, if you can laugh together, ideally you can laugh at yourselves. You don't take yourselves so seriously.
Yeah.
And it can dilute some of the hardship in life.
Yes.
And give it perspective. I mean, it really accomplishes a lot of, it kills a lot of birds with that one stone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and it biochemically, it does wonders for your body too, apparently.
Right. Yeah. How important would you think for a good marriage it is to have a feeling of being in love? Because I hear a lot of partners say, yeah, I love my spouse, I'm just not in love with them anymore, and they feel like they're really up a creek at that point.
Well, you know, that's a tough phrase, because sometimes it's really what they really mean is that they're not sexually attracted, or they don't feel that they have a good intimate life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really clear if they mean that they're not in love, or if it's a way of saying, you know, hey, our intimacy really is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you love someone, you're essentially in love with them, and if intimacy is a problem, it's important for the two of you to try to work it through, to figure out how to get back to a sense of both physical and emotional intimacy. So.
Well, that kind of gets to another question that I was thinking about in preparing for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a marriage can be healthy if there's no sex? I see more and more couples these days who either haven't been having sex for a while, or they've barely ever had sex, or it just completely fell off the radar. And I see some couples who are in sexless marriages, and they're not reporting that as the problem.
Right.
There are other things that they experience as problematic. So I'm wondering, what do you feel a marriage can be healthy if there's no sex in the marriage?
Technically, yes. I think that having a healthy marriage is really two people agreeing on how they're going to live and how they live and enjoying each other's company the way they live it. So technically, sure. I mean, it's can you have a successful meal without dessert? Yeah, of course. But the dessert, is awfully good, and that enriches the meal. So I would say yes, but, is there agreement, equal agreement on both parties, with both parties, that this is okay for both of them, that neither one of them misses the sex or needs the sex or wants
mm-hmm.
the sex?
Yeah.
And, sometimes one will say, well, acquiesce because it's too problematic to try to address it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have to be really truthful with yourself to see, is this truly okay?
Yeah.
And are there underlying problems that the sexlessness is really an indicator of?
Right.
That need to be discovered and need to be addressed because they're going to crop up sometimes in an affair,
Yeah. Yeah. So it really, the lack of sex needs to be consensual, it sounds like you're saying.
Without question, it needs to be consensual. Yeah,
it's not going to be healthy if it's only one person.
No.
Now, Sergio, I have a question. One brave caller is raising their hand, so let me just put them on the air, okay?
Sure. Absolutely.
Hello, caller.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi, this is Marjorie from New York.
Okay.
And you guys just answered my question when you were talking about the three prerequisites for a healthy relationship in a marriage. And I was I raised my hand and was going to say, well, what about sex? You guys forgot about sex.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. You answered my question.
So would you say, what's your own opinion? Would you say that sex is a prerequisite for a healthy marriage?
Yes, I would.
You would? Okay.
Yes. When we're talking about the male species, absolutely.
Yes.
And you're talking to an Italian, Mark.
And you're talking to one of those Italian male species.
Are you guys serious? Let's not skirt around the issue.
But do you think there can be marriages where there's plenty of sex, but there isn't a kind of trust toward the partner as a best friend, or there isn't mutual respect?
Well, yes, Sergio hit it on the head when he said there. The number one criteria is respect. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have really great hot sex and, when it comes down to waking up the next morning and his breath smells and, you don't look exactly the way you did the night before and you have to face your day with three screaming little ones.
Right.
If you don't have mutual respect and understanding, I think it would all be a wash.
Yeah, I mean, the last night's sex gets forgotten very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Well, and, I'm enjoying the show very much so far, so I'll let you two continue.
Okay.
Well,
you want me to keep you on the air if you want to pipe in at any other point?
Oh, no, I'll raise my hand when, I was very brave this time. So.
Yes, you were. Well, thank you for your question and your comments. Hope
you're
enjoying the show.
Well, I'm certainly enjoying the show.
Oh, good. Great. All right, I'm going to mute you. So obviously, it sounds like sex is important, but it's not the end-all and the be-all, and it sounds like we agree that it has to happen in the context of respect and trust.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And it has to be consensual that the sex is, the relative importance of sex has to be consensual.
I see that so frequently in my practice where it's usually women once they either they're, it usually starts when they're rearing young children and they're very distracted and pulled in different directions and tired, they lose interest. And then they've completely kind of checked out and there's a total loss of desire. They just don't have the energy or the thought for it by the time they've hit maybe 45. And often the husband is beside himself.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about one partner kind of checking out and the other partner still interested, wanting very much to keep that part of the relationship alive.
Well, I think, again, the communication is essential, that the two people need to talk about why they are where they are and what each one needs and wants. And to remember that for sex to be successful, you have to feel comfortable with each other. You have to feel that things have been taken care of during the day, that you're in a safe spot, in a safe moment, because that is the definition of intimacy, you know, sort of being in a safe emotional space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes the woman who's trying to raise young kids, she's dead tired. You know, it's not on her mind. So you need to create a time and a space where she's not tired, where you've taken care of the kids and she's had a some time off and been able to relax and luxuriate in a hot bath or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that then she is more perhaps interested in physical intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Also remembering that, you know, sex is like gift giving. You know, you don't give someone a gift that you want. You know, you give them a gift that they want.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that you know what your partner is needing and wanting and be willing to offer it. And sometimes that's the creation of a romantic context.
Yeah.
A romantic context.
So it sounds like maybe your doctoral student might have added a fourth component to what makes a good marriage. It sounds like you're saying generosity.
Well, yeah. Generosity, being able to think outside of oneself and think about what's going on for
mm-hmm.
their spouse, their partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every sense, whether being generous in conversation, allowing for the other and making room for the other and their wants and needs, whether you're being generous in making up if you've had a fight or there's been conflict, generous in terms of kind of being open-hearted and sharing your sense of your own, how you helped to create the mess, your own culpability in it. But also now you're talking about generosity sexually, kind of gifting the partner, thinking about what they need.
Exactly, exactly. And I don't mean some kinky thing that the partner needs.
Right.
I mean, it could be that too, but I really mean, you know, what helps him or her feel loved and open and safe and therefore ready for sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what about the affairs and infidelity? What's your feeling about how that factors into all this and how it presents a danger or not to a healthy marriage?
Well, you know, let's go back to car talk. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
if the car isn't kept in tune and in good shape, then it's got bad tires that can blow out. You know, you can have an accident, and that car can get pretty smashed up, pretty banged up. So I think if you're not careful about keeping your marriage healthy and tuned, then the couple becomes more at risk of affairs. And sometimes it happens. You know, sometimes somebody, and again, sometimes it's just luck that someone comes across your movie screen at just at the right moment when you're feeling very upset or lonely or tired. And you haven't had sex in 4 years or whatever, and not by mutual consent, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a vehicle that's ready for an accident.
Yeah.
And sometimes those accidents happen. So, you know, not to say that, you know, these are choices. You can choose to steer away from the accident.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're driving a healthier vehicle, chances are you can avoid that accident better.
Yeah, yeah. And what if there's been an affair? A lot of people, there's a belief among a lot of people that it's irreparable damage and it's a stain on the marriage and it's something that nobody can recover from. And I'm wondering, what's been your experience with that? If there's been an affair, what's the chance of, if you use that car metaphor again, kind of steering it back onto the road, getting it off from over the cliff and back onto the road in good working condition?
I'm going to change the metaphor if I can.
Okay. We've done enough with cars here.
Not enough of cars. But you've heard the expression, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah.
I think that goes for affairs, too. You know, an affair can kill the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't kill the marriage, it can also make it stronger.
Mm-hmm.
If the couple can survive the affair, learn from what brought it on, you know, what are the dangers to the couple? What were we not looking at? What we need to do differently? How do we rebuild the trust, really focus on rebuilding the trust? How can I not take you for granted anymore and really look at you as my partner in a fresh way like I did, you know, when we were first dating? If you can learn from the affair and get mutually together, put it behind you, you can have a stronger marriage. I've seen that happen a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't kill it, it can make it stronger. But it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah. And do you feel that there are particular things couples need to do that will ensure against it killing the relationship?
Go to therapy.
Okay. With you.
Well, with me.
For me.
With a couple therapists. I mean, I think going to therapy is usually very important because you need to be able to have a safe place to talk about it.
Yeah.
The second is you need to rebuild the trust. So the person who was untrustworthy needs to prove him or herself again by being a completely open book, by opening him or herself up to
mm-hmm.
their partner. So that you become a we again instead of you against me.
Yeah.
So it the rebuilding of the trust requires just, you know, an open book. You say, what, you want to look at my cell phone messages? Why do you want to do that? Yeah, no, show it. Show everything, you know. If you've got nothing to hide, you have to hide nothing. So that's an important first step to rebuilding the trust.
Full disclosure.
Full disclosure.
And transparency.
And transparency from that moment forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the person who's been victimized by the affair needs to be really wise about what questions he or she wants to ask. Because
mm-hmm.
then you have to live with the answer.
That's right.
So if you really need to know something in order to move on, then ask the question and the other person has to tell.
Yeah. I also think of it as couples, after they get over the initial crisis and the upheaval, and they calm down the initial crisis of discovery, and they go through the transparency and the initial process of disclosure and all that, they ultimately need to get to how an affair is a symptom, that affairs don't usually happen in monogamous relationships that are happy. You know, if you have an agreement that it's an open marriage and everybody's going to screw around and do their own thing, that's one thing. But if that was not the agreement, then I think that couples really need to look at, well, how can we understand the affair as unwittingly maybe co-created? And
yeah.
That's a big problem usually for the person who feels victimized by it, the hurt partner, as we call them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the affair is an indication that the marriage wasn't as healthy as you thought it was. And so whose responsibility is to help it become healthy again? It's both people's responsibility. Even though it was purely one person's bad steering, you know, that you know, crashed you into the tree, it's still the responsibility of both people to try to fix the vehicle and make sure that temptation to turn into the tree. I'm mixing my metaphors here.
Yeah, you sure are. You got to get off that road or get in a new car.
We need a new car. So often the affair is not about a new car. It's about, you know, something's wrong with this old car that we need to fix.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem in the American mentality anyway, that if you just get a new model, rather than instead of recognizing that even the new model, the warranty will run out and things are going to break down. It needs maintenance.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, oil change and tune-up.
Exactly. Now, Sergio, from I don't know how old you were when you left Italy, but do you have a sense of how it may be different in Europe, any of the stuff?
Well, when you read the news about the famous prime minister of Italy, I guess...
oh, my God, a pedophile.
I guess I don't really want to know.
I think he's facing 17 years.
He's facing, I mean, he's if he's found guilty, he's facing statutory rape. But I was very young when I left, so I don't have a lot of information about how marriages are different in Italy, except for my family. You know, my parents had a wonderful marriage. My mother died just short of their 60th anniversary. My sister had a great marriage. Then unfortunately her husband also passed away in his late 60s. So the marriages that I've seen have been quite healthy, but I'm sure there's problems there too.
Yeah. Well, one thing they seem to do differently in Europe, and this may be incorrect perception on my part, but maybe I've just gotten it from movies and books, and my travels there, they seem to legitimize something more open in marriage. And it doesn't seem to be both ways. I know, for instance, in Italy, the men are often cavorting and drinking and flirting with young girls while the women at home barefoot and pregnant and making the pasta.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm sure there's some of that, but if you've been in an urban setting, the women really are pretty liberated. They're out there in the world. They're flirting. It's pretty mutual in terms of respecting the attractiveness of the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that they're going to have an affair. I mean, you don't have to jump into bed. You don't have to actually consummate a flirtation. Mm-hmm. It's just that, if anything, if there is something to be said about that lifestyle, it's that they respect the notion of flirtation without taking it the next step.
Yeah, so maybe I got a skewed perception of it. This was also, what was it now, about 35 years ago, and me traveling around in my early 20s with two wild students and going mostly through the countryside in Italy. So maybe I got a bit of a skewed perception.
Well,
now, Sergio, I have there's a caller who has, another caller has a question. So let me put this caller on the air, okay?
Sure.
Hello, caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Hello? Somebody's hand went up. Because they had a question, but now somebody's very... Are you there, caller? No, I guess not. I don't know, maybe my switchboard is off. Anyway, we're talking about relationships getting derailed.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there's what your thoughts are, and I don't know if this is getting too specific, but this just occurred to me. Do you feel that a marriage can be healthy if there's a presence of pornography in it?
Well, you know, again, the mutuality, the consensuality is an essential component of it. If one person is retreating to pornography, why is that? You know, if both people are stimulated by the pornography, that has a very different meaning. You know, that's a mutuality. That's an excitement together or whatever. But if one person is retreating into it, and that's the same with you know, internet connections. You know, if you're flirtation
right.
on the internet, you know, if one person goes off into a corner and has this kind of experience, whether it's pornography or flirtation on the internet, that's a sign that something's not healthy in the relationship.
Yeah.
If both people are doing it, well, that has a different meaning. You know, it's like this is a team activity. This is you and me doing something that we both enjoy doing and brings us together in some fashion.
So it sounds like in whatever arena we're talking about, that the key thing, a central thing in a healthy marriage, is mutuality.
Yes. Absolutely.
Whether it's in a conversation or it's the use of porn or whatever, in sex, whatever.
Absolutely. Mutuality and consensuality, true consensuality, not that one person is intimidated into it because they're afraid to bring it up or they're afraid their partner is going to be disappointed if they don't agree.
Oh, yeah. Something just happened. It just said you're not connected to the internet. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Now it's back. My switchboard is playing tricks on me. It's disappearing, telling me I'm not connected to the internet. Anyway, hopefully this will get us through to the end of the show. We have a few minutes left.
Okay.
So what were you saying?
Be damned if I remember.
Maybe that's one hallmark. Limited memory, so if you had a fight yesterday, you don't remember it.
Oh, there's a lot that you said for forgetting, yes.
Well, it's one advantage to aging. It puts things in perspective. You don't remember half the stuff that you were.
I think I was angry with you yesterday, but I don't remember why, so let's just move on.
So let's forget it. It couldn't have been too important, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
So...
Well, you know, actually,
else?
as you grow older, you know, one of the nice things about growing older is that that you don't take things so seriously anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like everything when you're young, it's like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? You know, and is this the end of the marriage, or is this, you know, what's the significance of this? But as you get older, you sort of say, oh, that's okay. You know, we're just riding along over the waves. Together.
Do you think that's because people lower their standards as they get older?
I don't think so. I think it's because you don't take yourself nearly as seriously.
Yeah.
You know, life is short, you know, enjoy it.
So people pick their battles better.
People pick their battles better and they learn how to be with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think there's more... just general acceptance and recognition that, well, first of all, you get too tired to fight about all the stupid stuff you fought about earlier in life.
Right.
You know. Now, I see another hand up.
Yep.
Let me see if this person has a question. Okay, one second. Hi, caller. Your hand went up again. Did you have another question? Hello?
I hear a distant voice.
Me too. Somebody's not connecting. Okay. You want to shout into the phone caller? No? Okay. Maybe not. And here's somebody else, this first person whose hand went up, and then this person disappeared. Caller, are you on the air? You seem to have a question. I see your hand. No? Maybe we put everybody to sleep. What do you think,
Sergio? at the beginning of this evening, I was very impressed with your technological knowledge. Now
you're not so sure.
Now I'm not so sure.
See, I'm going to blame it on my switchboard. There are hands going up, and there are they're like disembodied hands with nobody on the other end, I guess, or
ghost hands.
Well, you know what happens when my husband listens to the show, and I think actually one of the hands may be his. He falls asleep.
Oh.
So it's like one of these things about getting older that we've kind of accepted. He goes through the motions of listening. I know, I appreciate the effort, but I know he'll be asleep after 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So his hand probably went up because he's sleeping on the number one dial on the phone. Anyway,
I wanted to say one other thing in terms of, you know, the keeping the marriage fresh. You know, it's important not to take each other for granted. It's important that you try to recreate aspects of that spirit that you had in the courtship, because you know that lets your partner know that they're important in your life. So doing small things, you know, small surprises, like even something like, you know, gazing across the table at your partner and saying, you know, you're really a remarkable person. I love this thing and that thing about you. I just wanted to let you know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth, you know, dozens of roses right there.
Yeah.
It's that not taking for granted that's also very important in keeping it fresh.
Mm-hmm. I have a very interesting gratitude exercise that it's kind of a morbid gratitude exercise that gets to just that, so that it kind of shakes you into more awareness of appreciation, and where I encourage couples to visualize, this is bizarre, but to visualize that the partner's been hit by a truck and they're at the bedside dealing with people to bargaining with God, please, and thinking about what is it that you would be wishing you had said when before your partner was flatlining.
Right.
very bizarre thing. But
I hear someone's voice on the line here.
Here she is, your back caller. I had seen your hand was still up. And I didn't know if you had another question. And then you were talking and we didn't hear you. So before we stop, do you have any other questions you wanted to ask? Now she's disappeared again.
Okay.
She's very fickle. Anyway, couples always get a kick out of that one, just to try to imagine what you would wish you had said or done.
Yeah.
That you never got to, and then you come back, it's a kind of visualization, you come back, your partner is well and in front of you, you have more chances.
Yeah, that's a dramatic way of emphasizing not to take each other for granted. Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Right. A little melodramatic. Anyway, Sergio, I can't believe it, but it's 9:58 already. We have to wrap up, and I really want to thank you for joining me. This has been, as usual, fun.
It's been great fun.
Yeah, I hope you had a good time. I think you did. I certainly enjoyed you.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we had the technical difficulties with the callers. It sounded like there were some questions out there we could not connect with.
I know. There's one more hand that's up, and I don't trust it, and now we're out of time. Anyway, so thank you so much, Sergio. I just want to let people know that for anybody who wants to contact Sergio, you can email him at kaiprincipal@msn.com. Right, Sergio?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
kiprincipal@msn.com.
And thank you so much to all you listeners for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the show. And hopefully you learned something and you got a little view into how Sergio and I can get a little bizarre. Sergio's probably going to need a new car after this.
Or a tune-up.
Or a tune-up and an oil change. So tune into my next show, Wednesday, April 20th. This next one's going to be at 11 a.m. Because I'm featuring Barbara Hofmeister, the German author of the bestseller, To Be or Not to Be, The Choice is Yours. So good night, everybody, and good night, Sergio, and thanks again.
Good night, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.